I interviewed Zach Duncan about what he claimed was the worst project ever.
Hi, my name is Zach. I've been a software engineer for a long time, since I guess 1999. And I am here to talk about some of the shit I have seen. I used to work for this consultancy that followed a model not dissimilar to like ThoughtWorks, you know? And this is the exact opposite, I think, of Jeff's story, where like there's this bug that everybody who's like been on the internet in the last 10 years is aware of, right? That's Jeff's tale. Mm-hmm. And my tale is a story of a company you probably haven't heard of. And frankly, you're better off that way. The important thing is that this is a company that had a product that came out that was written on Vax Basic forever ago. And they had decided after some period of time that their customers really prefer it if they released a version that ran on Windows.
Okay.
They had begun work on the product 3 years before they contracted us. And when they contracted us, they were like, well, y'all, we think this project's in serious trouble on account of it being 3 years behind, still not done, and just riddled with bugs. So it was kind of a rocky scene. The first thing we discovered is that one of their smart people, you can't see me using my my scare quotes, but they're there. Like, not that this person definitely was smart, but like the stratification of them as like architect or whatever relative to their peers seemed somewhat arbitrary to me.
Got it.
So one of them had decided that engineers in the company were spending far too much time copying and pasting code. And like, hey, good observation. We have so much code that we're copying and pasting around. We should do something about that. Mm-hmm. And their decision was that the thing to do about it was to write a piece of software that would do the copying and pasting for them. What wound up happening is we now had a system where every single view you opened had bugs galore, and those bugs were duplicated throughout every view, but you could not fix them in one place. You had to fix them in all the places. And to give you an idea of how big this was, one of their engineers, when I first talked to them, bragged to me that their code base was 4 times the size of the Linux kernel. Let me step back. We note that it's using a SQL database, mm-hmm. and we note that they have created their own way of managing transactions using annotations. And anybody familiar with Java is going to be familiar with annotations. Uh-huh. And it's sort of the same thing in .NET, right? You put a little tag on a method that says something special about the method, and the runtime or the compiler does something special with that method.
Sure.
In this case, they created annotations to say whether a method should create a new transaction, enroll in any existing transactions, or ignore transactions altogether. Nice. That works. That way I don't have to manually do transaction begin, mm-hmm. you know, handle all the rollback, whatever, right? But we noticed that like some transactional behavior seems to be misbehaving after we like refactored some code, which seems wrong. Seems really wrong. Uh-oh. And so we start digging in to see how the transactions were operating. And we come to this one layer in the software that has these methods that say, like, literally, like the method will be called talk to Ben. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, talk to Ben, and there will be a line that says int x equals 1, new line, x plus plus, so increment it, increment x, then mm-hmm. call talk to Ben on the object below me, the object I wrap.
Sure.
And there are comments around it that say, this code is here to prevent the compiler from inlining this function. And that's it. That's all they say. This random like incremented variable is here to prevent the compiler from inlining this function.
Oh no.
Okay. That seems significant. We start looking a little further and we find that deep in their transaction system, in these annotations, is a constant. There's a number. The number is 4. And That 4 indicates how many steps up the call stack a DB touching piece of code should look to see if there is an annotation.
No.
To destroy.
Okay.
Yeah, you're seeing where I'm going. So to see whether or not it should enroll in that transaction. So they would unwind the stack and look up and see, hey, this function, does it have an annotation? It does. Okay. Enroll in that transaction. And it's a little weirder than that too, because it's like, I know that I am executing at this level, and the only way I can know whether I'm supposed to hop into this transaction or ignore this transaction or start my own is to like ask the code that called me to like reflect back on the code that called me a few generations up, 4 levels up the stack. So the method that called the method that called the method that called me, if that method has an annotation, do what that annotation says.
Oh, you're not looking at every level of the stack in between. You're just looking at 4 levels up.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Oh my God.
Right. So you can imagine how this would make things like inlining functions or extracting functions a little complicated. A
little bit.
What's worse is that I have been using the number 4 as though the number 4 were a constant.
Wow.
This, yeah. This, as it turns out, is not the case. The number 4 was in fact a global variable settable by any level of the code anywhere, and it could be at times 3 or 5. Right, so you've got a race on the stack number you should be looking up to see how you handle transactions.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's not thread local either, right?
Oh my God. So this could this could change in the middle of anything.
Yes, this could change in the middle of anything. And when we see this, we go, hey, if I understand what this is doing right, y'all should probably be seeing a lot of deadlocks. Like, customers should be, like, complaining about deadlocks. And the answer we get is no one has reported any deadlocks. You must be reading that wrong. That isn't happening. And we say, okay, so there's no bugs in no bug reports from like your beta customers about deadlocks. Your QA people never encounter deadlocks. No, never happens. Okay, we say, well, seems really surprising, but how about we do a thing where we put 2 of your QA people talking to the same server for a few hours and just have them run through the paces of the app and see if any such thing happens. Okay, whatever. You're wasting their time, but fine, whatever. 15 minutes into the testing against the same server, we deadlock. And we're like, look, this is happening. And they're like, okay, but that just happened once. It could have been anything. There's no evidence of it. At which point, I ask an engineer on the team who is unaware of like the back and forth we're having to query their bug database for the word deadlock, and he gets back 4,327 responses.
That's one of those ideas that you're like, it's so brilliantly wrong.
Yeah.
That you're like, man, props for committing. Yeah. Like, you took this bad idea and you had the like grit to really make that bad idea work.
It's the sort of bad idea that only a really intelligent person could come up with.
Right.
It's like a Rube Gold machine for like flicking yourself in the balls. It is like fucking magical.